You're listening to Our Two Cents with the team from SGL Financial, building wealth for life. Steve Lewitt is the president of SGL Financial and Gabriel Lewitt is the CEO. They're here to discuss all the latest in financial news, trends, strategies, and more.
Good morning and happy new year.
Happy new year, everybody.
This is Gabriel and Steve, and we're welcoming you back to our first 2023 edition of Our Two Cents.
It's so exciting to start a new year.
It is, and I don't even recall, Caitlin, maybe you know off the top of your head, producer Katie, what episode are we on here? Maybe you can pull, hold on, she's going to look it up real quick. And we've got a new year here for you. A range of new things to talk about,
yep.
as new things come along.
Yep.
We actually talked about some new things on the last show. But, yeah, hold on. She's still looking it up here. I think you can go to our website, right? It'll tell you on there.
She's logging. Give her a chance. She's logging in.
124.
124. We've done this 124 times.
We have shot the breeze 124 times.
And we're still talking to each other.
We are still looking and working with one another here in the studio.
Certainly amazing.
Yeah, it's been a good time.
Yep.
So we've got a great show lined up for you. Thanks for coming back and joining us here again for the new year. And, of course, with the new year, you know, ticking over here, Dad, what do you got planned ahead for the year? Anything I would say interesting or exciting that you'd want to share?
Well, you know, I've been writing a book for now
10 years.
7 years. Well, you know, books take a long time. If it's a good book, I know authors that have taken 10, 12 years to write a book. Novels take a long time. So this is about 60,000 words. So 7 years actually isn't that long. This year I will finish my book. I've got.
How much are you going to put down on that?
How much do you have in your pocket?
I have $0 in my pocket.
It's a bet.
I have a credit card in my pocket.
Yeah, I'll take your credit card for the day.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Yeah.
How about $100?
$100.
You heard it here.
Okay, you heard it here.
Folks, we're shaking hands on this bet.
I publish by September, October.
Get your money ready.
Folks, get your excitement and enthusiasm ready, although I am not sure this is a book for everybody.
Well, I know what you like. You write some weird stuff, man. So
it's a weird book.
So yeah, it's probably not for everybody.
Hey, look, I just came.
Spirituality based? What is it?
Philosophical.
Yeah,
more philosophical. How to live life and
not a financial advisory book.
No, this is
to
not
clarify.
Our planning book, which we're still working on. But you know, I spent 8 days, 10 days in Ojai, California, the first week in January.
I did know that, yes.
And folks, I want to tell you, I don't want you to feel badly for me because I had a wonderful time, but I had 8 out of 10 days of solid rain. I mean, it was like raining buckets out there. And I think, Katie, you mentioned there's a flood warning out there now.
No, there's been floods.
Oh, there's been
not
floods.
Not just flood warning, yeah.
Yeah.
All over the state, I think.
But, you know, when I spend 10 days staring at the mountains, strange things happen in my head.
Let's not go there.
part of that's in the book.
Other than your, I don't want to know. And other than your book, anything else planned for the year ahead? Goals, resolutions, you know, the fun things that everyone likes to think about and then hopefully do?
No. I've got, I think my goal this year, Gabriel, is to have better time management, sleep better. Sleep better.
Cool.
Yeah, because I get up.
How have you slept so far?
You know, I'm doing great. Well, you know why? Because I'm getting to bed earlier.
That's good.
Yeah. I'm not staying up until like 12 o'clock watching a show that I can't. You know, you get into a series and you always want to see what happens in the next. So I always start the next series, you know, the next session.
Mm-hmm.
And then it hooks me in. I say, well, I'll just watch the end of this one. And then I get hooked into the next one.
Well, I think
one,
they do that on purpose.
Of course.
Yes, of course.
I succumb.
Oh, there you go. All right. Well, folks, let's go ahead and dive into our topics here for the show here today. So we've got some interesting tidbits and topics here. One was from an article titled Retirement Numbers That Savers Need to Know Heading into 2023. Retumbers. That's funny.
Yes.
That's a retirement number, folks.
Retumber.
It's a retumber. Okay, so what are they? Okay, these are some fun little numbers just to kind of kick things off here for the year. 25%. What is 25% representing? According to John Hancock, that is the number of retirement savers that said that their finances often cause them stress.
Yeah.
25%.
Yeah, and I kind of looked at that with askew or askance. I looked at that
with skepticism.
With skepticism, yeah. Because I know that most people that we see, now, it depends on what you call stress. You know, stress is like a big word, like I'm stressed out over my money. But most all the folks we talk to have some concern or worry or agitation, which is a kind of stress. So I think that number is much higher depending on how people interpret stress.
Certainly, yeah. It could be we don't know all the options that were on the survey.
Right.
But, yeah, that's still either way. You know, if you're stressed out there, there were a lot of reasons last year when you look at the market and the economy and inflation. There were many areas of concern for people last year. And, in fact, what the second part of this number here is that it was up substantially from earlier in the year last year when markets were at a high. And then they redid the survey later in the year, and they had a substantially higher increase in the number of people that were stressed out.
So it went from 18% to 25%. So that's a 7% increase on 18%, which is about 40%. So that's a big jump. You know, even if it's higher, the ratio would probably be the same. So
yeah.
So that is a pretty big jump, and there's good, as you said, there is last year was a tough year.
It was, and that's going to bring us to our next number here, which was the year 1931, okay? So
I remember that year.
I don't. I don't think you did either.
I don't.
No. I don't think many of our listeners have either.
Well,
so,
I hope they do, some of them. Yeah.
Well, so 1931 was the worst year of a 60-40 portfolio, 60-40 meaning 60% equities and 40% bonds, which is generally considered to be a very well-balanced retirement portfolio.
Traditional retirement, conservative growth kind of portfolio.
Yeah, so 1931 was considered to be the worst year for a 60-40 portfolio where it had lost about 36% of its value.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so a lot of people felt last year was a very bad year for their 60-40, and it was because, of course, bonds were down quite a bit last year due to rising interest rates.
Yeah.
And it was a historically bad year for bonds and an unusually bad year for a 60-40 portfolio.
Yeah, so folks had in our planning when folks say, you know, we're really conservative, we would buy a portfolio that has more bonds in it. That's the way we would organize that portfolio. But unbeknownst to anybody, bonds, which are supposed to go up in value when the stock market goes down in value, had their worst year in history.
Well, it was a combination effect. The market went down, but interest rates went up,
yes,
which caused bond prices to go down. Mm-hmm. So both went down at the same time.
Yep.
Okay, so it's pretty unusual to ever see that occur. Certainly not a great experience to have gone through. But what does it mean? Does it mean you make massive changes to your portfolio, ditch bonds forever, get out, time the market? No, right? These are things that generally will harm you in the long run. In fact, there's lots of data that says in the 5 years, you know, after a market downturn, 60-40 portfolios do very, very well.
Extremely well.
Yeah.
Yes.
In fact, the data point here from the article says that they, on average, have annualized returns of 13% in the 5 years after a market downturn.
Yeah, it's the reaction to the market out there, the emotional impulse, and say, you know, I'm getting pretty wiped out here. You know, you got a 401k, and your 401k is your retirement savings, and that loses, you know, 20-25% at the worst point, 26%, and it's like, oh my gosh, you know, how am I going to retire? What am I going to do? How am I going to save more money? And that's where the stress comes from.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you're feeling stress, if you're worried about the performance of your portfolio, it's always good to talk about those things, right? And we are here to help guide you through those questions. And sometimes, you know, the other thing to point out is all 60-40 portfolios are not built the same.
I'm glad you brought that. That's really important.
A lot
Say
of
more
times,
about that.
Well, a lot of times, you know, I might ask somebody how they're invested, and they say, well, I'm aggressive. And then we get into what that means, and they might have all individual stocks, which is not just aggressive, it's speculative, okay, which is a much more dangerous form of aggressive investing.
Surely.
And just like somebody can say they have a 60-40, you might have a 60-40 with two funds in it, and you could have a 60-40 with 20 funds in it. That's a far more diversified portfolio that's going to be far less risky than your two-fund 60-40.
Yeah, so all 60-40s don't mean conservative. It just means 60 equities, 40% bonds. If that 60% equities, to your point, Gabriel, is all tech stocks,
yeah,
you know, you got a pretty aggressive portfolio.
Yeah, lots of different ways you can arrange your portfolio if you're just looking at it from a broad asset class number like a 60-40. So just something to keep in mind. I don't want to get too far down that path there today. Our next number here is 22,500. That represents the contribution limit, the upped contribution limit to a 401k for 2023, mm-hmm. up from 20,500. So it was an increase, a very surprisingly large increase of $2,000 that you can now additionally add into your 401k each year.
Yeah, I was surprised at that. I actually was surprised that they pushed the required minimum distributions back a year. So this year, if you're 72, you do not have to take out a required. I think we have a question about that later, don't we?
Yes, we do.
Oh, okay. Yep. So I won't say
don't
anything.
Don't spoil the thunder.
I won't spoil the thunder.
All right. So what?
I already spoiled
you
it.
You did kind of spoil it. Yes.
I'm sorry.
Well, what does that mean? It just means if you, I know it might be tricky with inflation, you know, eating away and chipping away at your budget, but if you have additional dollars and you're worried and stressed about your retirement, this gives you the opportunity to save more. And saving more, of course, is always a good thing and helps you in your retirement planning.
Yeah, and folks, 401ks are the traditional way of saving. It's very, very popular. Gabriel, I just want to point out also, as we always do, there are other ways to save, but this is a terrific way of automating your savings. Just have it come out of your paycheck, and then it just grows because you're dollar cost averaging into the market.
Yes, exactly. So always a good idea there. And then our number here, our fourth number here for this segment is 41.7, which if you didn't know, is the average age of the American worker.
I'm pulling that average up. I just want you to know.
Well, I'm pulling it down.
You're pulling it down, right?
So we got to that average of 41.
So is Katie. Katie's pulling it way down.
Now, some of you might be higher than that number. Some of you might be lower. But what does it mean if the average retirement age is 65? You know, the average worker at 41.7 still has about 24 years mm-hmm. that they can save and invest. And in investment world, 24 years can be a pretty long time.
It can be.
Okay. So
unfortunately, it goes pretty quick.
Yes, it certainly can. So what does that mean? It means you want to make sure that as you are assessing your plan, you know, you look at your time horizons, you adjust your portfolio accordingly, and making sure that everything is really well integrated as part of your retirement planning.
Yeah, so I had a client in the other day, Gabriel, 40 or 39, around 40 years old, and their question was to me, is it too early to start retirement planning? Which I thought a really interesting question, and the answer is no, absolutely not. In fact, the earlier you start, the better off you are. Gabriel, you and I were talking about you know, how do you, like a child, you have a child 20 or 25 years old, if you want to help that child with retirement, mm-hmm. There are ways of doing that because that child, let's say you have a child 20 years old and they're going to retire at 65. Well, they've got 45 years. There's magic. There are products that over 45 years that will deliver huge amounts of income for a child at 65 years old that you can set up today for a modest amount of money. So it's never too early to start retirement.
No, never. In fact, that's part of the new SECURE Act, which we talked about on the last show. They're going to automatically, you know, start adding a contribution for workers They don't have to opt in. They could opt out, but they automatically add that in because, you know, everybody knows, right? The sooner you start saving, there's a power to it that only comes with time. And if we can take time and put it on our side, you're going to be in much better shape.
Absolutely.
Yep. Yep. So those are just a couple of fun numbers for you to keep in mind as you think about your planning. And, of course, if you've got questions there, if you are amongst those 25% or higher that are concerned about their or even stressed about their finances, that's the time to talk with a planner or advisor.
Or just want to double check. I want to be sure.
Yeah, give us a call here, 847-499-3330, or go to sglfinancial.com. And we, of course, would love to have a time just to chat with you and see how we might be able to help. And with that, let's talk a little bit about millionaires.
I love millionaires.
Well, yeah. Why would we talk about millionaires?
Well, what's interesting about that to me, because I'm a few years older than you are, Gabriel, but when I was your age, being a millionaire was like an amazing thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you're a millionaire? That's so amazing. And over the years, it's like they're all over the place. So the article says there are, how many does it say there? 24.5 million millionaires in 2022.
Yep.
Which is a lot of millionaires.
It is a lot of millionaires.
Yeah.
24.5 million millionaires.
Yeah.
Sorry. I thought I said it twice, but I did say it twice. Anyways, what does that mean? Well, why are we talking about it? Because $1 million isn't what it used to be.
It's not what it used to be, and the cost of living has gone up,
mm-hmm.
and just having $1 million may not cut the mustard.
Well, it's interesting. I think things are tricky out there for people. I just had a client meeting 2 days ago. Now, they're a pretty well-off, couple that earns a good amount of income, okay, about $250,000 a year combined.
Mm.
And they were looking to buy a new house, which was about, I think it was a $550,000 house. And they were saying, okay, here in Illinois, with all the property taxes, insurance, higher interest rates, of course, now on mortgages, they were saying that the mortgage that they would want for this home would be close to $5,000 mm-hmm. per month.
Mm-hmm.
And they were asking me, what are other people paying? Like, we feel like we make good money and we can't afford to buy a house.
Yes.
And, I think it's across the board. People with $1 million don't feel like they have $1 million, or it just doesn't go as far. People that make good income feel like they can't afford to buy things. People that are making less than that are also struggling, feeling like they can't afford to buy food at the grocery store or buy gas. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a hard time just... I feel there's a pervasive feeling across the board that people are feeling very, very tight with their money.
Very, very much so, especially in light of rising prices. You go into the food store and all of a sudden you're spending 30-40% more than you would normally spend. And a lot of folks can't afford that.
Well, it's funny. I was at the grocery store the other day and I shop in multiple stores. I try to find certain things at certain stores. So I buy certain things at Whole Foods. I buy certain things at Target. I buy certain things at Mariano's right by my house. But the other day I was at Whole Foods looking for some pears in particular for my son. And they have good pears.
I'm not going to ask you why you shop around for pears.
Pears are, you got to find the right ones.
Wait,
you know?
A pear. So you go to different stores to find
pears? No, I don't go to different. I buy the pears from Whole Foods.
Isn't he a good dad, folks? He's such a good dad.
Well, anyways, my point is I was walking past the, I was going to pick up a chicken for dinner, and I was walking past the milk section, and they have different brands of milk there. They have some of their, normal brands, and they got some of the, fancy brands or whatever, but there was a gallon of milk that was over $10.
Yeah.
I was like, wait a second. I was like, I'm not buying that one.
Nope.
So I bought the, I forget what the normal regular organic brand that was, still $6 for a gallon of milk. But it was, it's really crept up there, prices and inflation, and it can be a hard pill to swallow.
Yeah. So $1 million. Think of it this way: how much income can $1 million give me? Well, the article points out, and it, appropriately, that if you use the old 4% rule, on where you take 4% of your investments as income, and that's called the safe money withdrawal rate, which we can argue about at some point in time, but I'm not a big believer of it, but if you did, 4% of $1 million, 40 grand a year. Now, if you got 40 grand a year and you pick up another, let's say, 35,000 in Social Security and you take off taxes, that becomes your budget.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're spending 100 grand a year and you got $1 million because you were making high income but not saving, you got $1 million, that's not, you're not going to have that quality of lifestyle when you retire. So $1 million at 4% a year is only $40,000 a year. So are there better ways of planning income than using that old-time rule? And, you know, essentially, Gabriel, that's what we do, is we have better ways of planning income than using that rule.
Well, there are definitely other ways, other approaches. The 4% rule is one that's commonly out there, but I like the quote from this article. It says, people are surprised when they do the math and realize 4% of 1 million is only 40,000. And certainly, of course, it is, you know, four times.
Well, it's 40,000 less taxes if it's coming out of an IRA.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Now it's 30,000.
Yep. And so $30,000 doesn't really take you too far in retirement, depending on what you're typically used to spending or living on while you're working. And so, yeah, so $1 million is used to be the target number, and what the gist of the article is it's a higher number these days for a lot of people. Now, I still think if you've got, husband, wife, and you both have good jobs, and you both have Social Security, good payments coming in, maybe you've got $1 million and you don't live too lavishly, you'll be able to retire on $1 million.
For sure.
But you're not going to have a oodles and oodles of extraneous money that you can go out and spend with that $1 million.
Yeah, not a lot of play money, as
right.
we call it.
Right, because if you do use up the $1 million base,
you're done.
Guess what? You're not earning interest on that anymore.
Well, all you have is your Social Security is left, or a pension.
Yep. So what does that mean? Well, as we plan out your retirement, as you said, Dad, there's other ways of planning for income, but we also want to make sure that you feel like you're going to have enough saved up. So this, you asked earlier, when's too soon to start planning for retirement? I don't think there is a too soon.
Yeah, and I think it's really, folks need to be careful here, Gabriel. I remember the ads, I forgot what company it was, says, do you know your number?
I'm not sure. I do remember the ad, but yeah, I don't remember who did it.
And you know what? It's not only about the number, it's about how that number is used. So there are different parts of this. Just saying I'm going to have $1 million or $2 million is not sufficient to plan your retirement, aim for a number. It needs a plan behind it that says, okay, here's my number, here's how I'm going to get my income, here's how I'm going to save my money. It's a linkage of different things, not just know your number.
Well, I think the new 1 million is like 3 million.
3 million, yep.
Yeah, is what I've seen with clients that I have that have $3 million. They can spend pretty comfortably. They've got some excess surplus. They can do a lot more and not really think as much about it. But with $1 million, you still have to plan fairly carefully.
Tighter.
Yeah, a lot tighter.
Yep.
So 3 million is the new 1 million. And how do you get to that 3 million? Well, you got to continue to put your plan in place to get there. And that's one of the things we can help guide you with.
Definitely. Yeah. It's what we do.
It's what we do. All right. So we did have a listener question here that Mr. Lewitt spoiled one of them in advance.
Well, I
thank you very much, Mr. Lewitt.
I'm the spoiler.
over the last week or two, we've had just a couple questions pop in that we want to make sure we have the chance to answer here on the show. And let's start with the one that you led into there a little bit earlier, Ellen. Ellen, you emailed us and you said that you turned 72 at the start of this year, and you're wondering about how to take your RMD from your IRA this year and whether or not you should reinvest it. Well, I'm laughing a little bit because I have good news for you,
Ellen. Yes.
Which is you don't have to take it this year.
Good news, which she already had.
What's that?
She already had the good news. I said that.
I'm
earlier.
I'm not tracking with you.
Oh, I said earlier you don't have to take it.
Yeah, so I'm addressing
you're
Ellen.
You're reiterating the good news.
Yes, reiterating.
Yes.
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 So what does that mean? It means you just don't do anything. If you don't need the RMD or the income this year, you just don't take anything out.
You know what's surprising, Gabriel? Already this year, I've got three phone calls on Steve. we need to plan my RMDs this year. I'm turning 72.
So, yes, if you haven't, to be very explicit there, because there's a lot buried in that Secure 2.0 law that this is part of, you don't have to take your RMD this year if you're turning 72 this year.
Exactly.
Yep. So Alan, hopefully that helps answer your question. The second part there, well, let me just touch upon it. You mentioned what should you do with it. Well, if you don't need it and you do have to take RMDs this year, let's say you had to take it last year, then you'll probably have to take it this year. That's not an exception for you. You would just typically reinvest it. So you can, it's as simple as just moving it to a new account after tax. In fact, I've done this for a handful of clients last year, and you just pay the taxes the following spring and you keep the money invested.
All right. So could you clarify what you just said? Well, if you took it last year, you have to take it this year.
Well, if you turned 72 last year, 2022, and you took your RMD, you're going to be 73 this year anyways.
Right.
So you'd have to take your RMD.
Right.
So yeah. So if you were taking your RMD last year, you still have to take your RMD this year.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. But again, if you're turning 72 this year, then you don't have to.
Yeah, that does make sense. I was thinking of something else. That does make sense. If I was 72 a year later, I would be 73.
You indeed would be.
Yeah, I would be.
Yes, you would. That's how simple math works. I'm just teasing.
Me, financial advisor, you know.
Oh, goodness. All right. Well, we did have another question here from Matt. Matt, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
You asked, should I be doing anything besides 529 plans to save for my kids for college, or is that still the best option for me?
Oh, I love that question.
You want to take point on that?
Well, you know, I'm not a big fan of 529 plans. I'm not going to go into the reason why, but depending on the age of your children, or if you're someone out there that wants to do something for your grandchildren, I love the strategy of using... Now, don't get upset at these words, life insurance, not for life insurance, but to build cash value inside the life insurance that the kids can use or the parents can use to pay for college education tax-free. And that does two things. First of all, the money is inside life insurance, so it's not countable on the FAFSA for financial aid. So you can have wealthy people that have most of their money in life insurance and annuities, and they will get financial aid because those are non-countable assets.
Yeah, they know how to kind of play the system
a little bit. So the strategy would work like this, Gabriel, is let's say I want to do something for my grandkids or my own kids, is I could buy a life insurance policy on my son or daughter, build cash value, I own the policy, and then when those kids need funds for their college education, my kids just dip in and do it for their kids, or the parent dips in and takes that money out for their kids, all tax-free.
Yep. So it's a very interesting alternative to the 529. It's kind of interesting because they just came out with a rule in the Secure 2.0 Act that just came out that you can roll over some of your unused 529 plan. So one of the downsides traditionally of a 529 is if you end up not needing the money, you would have a penalty taking it out for anything other than school. Now, there are some other ways of manipulating it and changing the beneficiary to your grandkid or something like that. But with life insurance, what's interesting is there already was a built-in benefit of if you never spent it on college, didn't matter because it wasn't really explicitly designed for college. When you take out tax-free income via policy loans from the life insurance, won't get too deep into the mechanics of how it works, they don't care where you spend it, right? So most of the time when we use it for college planning, the point is to use it for college. But if you had $100,000 in that policy that you saved up for college and then your child gets a full scholarship or decides not to go to school.
Doesn't go to school.
Uses half of it, the entire remaining balance can just roll forward and be used for whatever amount, again, tax-free. And so it gives you better financial aid. It gives you, in many cases, greater amounts of income to take out because of just some of the mechanics. And it also gives you a very high degree of flexibility on what to use it for. And it's a very little known approach for how to save for college.
And it has my two favorite words in there, tax-free.
You know, I already said tax-free.
I know you did, but I'm
you know I said that, right?
I am re-emphasizing.
you're giving
me back.
I'm going to do to you what you did to me.
You're returning my favor.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
So folks, my two favorite words, tax-free. If I could get all your money into tax-free buckets, that's our goal.
It's a good goal. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, we actually do that for some people. We get them into a zero tax bracket.
Mm-hmm. We do.
And it's amazing what you can do if you really understand the laws and are focused on it.
Yeah. So that's more of a topic in detail. Producer Katie, I think I don't remember if we've officially actually discussed what we call the zero tax plan for retirement on the show, but that would be a good topic for a deeper dive.
Yeah, let's do that.
Where we really dive into the mechanics of how to make that happen. It's really, some people, when we go through the concepts of that, they say, well, that's too much work.
Or it's too good to be true.
But for the clients that that do it, it works great, and it really isn't too much work, funny enough.
No, look, we have folks in very high income brackets normally, that are spending $150,000, $200,000 a year paying no taxes.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that would be a great show, Katie. And then when you put your headphones on, Katie, you can participate.
Keep trying.
We keep trying.
You keep trying. Right. All right, our friends, thank you so much for tuning into our show here today. We really love talking to you here and spending some time together. And we are wishing you, on behalf of Steve and I, a very, very happy new year. For everything, not just money, but for life, family, health, wealth, friends, friendship, activities, you name it.
Amen.
And so, of course, if you have any questions about the money side of things or how we can help you, give us a call here at 847-499-3330 or go to sglfinancial.com, click Contact Us, and we are here to help you anytime.
Stay well, everybody. Happy New Year. Be good.
Talk to you on the next show.
Thanks for listening to Our Two Cents with Steve and Gabriel Lewitt. For any questions about your finances, give SGL a call at 847-499-3330 or visit us on the web at sglfinancial.com. And be sure to subscribe to join us on next week's episode.
Investment advisory services are offered through SGL Financial LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. Insurance and other financial products are offered separately through individually licensed and appointed agents.